WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. We have open talk to begin the program today. Our phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. We'll have guests later. We'll be chatting today with the director of VA Butler Healthcare, David Cord, will be with us. And we're also going to be talking today with an interesting guy. His name is David Green, and his father-in-law, it turns out, was from Austria, an immigrant to the United States from Austria, ended up in possession of a lot of Nazi documents at the end of World War II. And David Green went looking for this story, and we will talk to him about that. It's a pretty fascinating thing. That's coming up on the final segment of the program today. So that's what we're going to be about on the It's Your Turn program for a Tuesday. Open talk to begin with, 283-2525, our number. This is deer season, the second day of deer season. Not the best weather for hunters. Now, for anybody else, if you're not a deer hunter, I mean, you know, we're loving this. 60 degrees today. Lots of sunshine yesterday. We had 51 for a high here in Butler, and lots of sunshine. But if you're out in the woods, traipsing through the woods in hunting clothes, and then if you're, you know, good enough or lucky enough to get a deer, you've got to drag it back to your vehicle. It's not good weather for that. And you also have to make sure that you get the deer prepared for processing as quickly as possible. In cold weather, it's not so critical. In fact, one of the recommendations for deer hunters is when they're removing the innards and so on of the deer, field dressing it, to stuff ice, snow and ice, inside to keep the venison from spoiling. Now, you're not going to be able to do that today. So what it means is probably fewer hunters driving around and displaying their trophy on the bumper of their vehicle or the fender of their vehicle. At least not all day, like they sometimes do in the cold weather, because you're on the risk of the meat spoiling very, very quickly. So then it's tough to it's strenuous to hunt when it's this hot, this warm. I don't know about foliage. I'm not a deer hunter. I did it one time very briefly, but it was a long, long time ago. It seems to me that the foliage, which is still on a lot of the trees, would make it pretty difficult for hunters this year. Now, a lot of the leaves are down, of course, but some aren't. And even on some of the lower bushes and shrubs, you know, even when you're driving along the road, you can see that. So that would make it difficult, right, to spot the deer and to make sure you got a safe shot. And yeah, so all in all, it's not the best. I have not seen any preliminary numbers from the first day yesterday. I'm not sure whether the Game Commission will have those for us later on today or not. They're able to do that pretty much with the bear season. And the bear harvest this year, the bear season is 4 days long here in Pennsylvania. It comes a week or so before Thanksgiving. And the bear harvest was down 30% this year over last year. Down a third, which is, I mean, that's amazing. And the Game Commission officials blamed it on the weather. The first day of bear season, which was a couple of Saturdays ago, the Saturday before Thanksgiving, I don't know whether you remember that day, it rained all day long. And it rained constantly, and it rained hard. And that pretty much wiped out the first day. And the only weekend day of bear season. The other 3 days were Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So we'll see what sort of effect the weather has on the deer harvest. You have hunters in your family. Are you a hunter yourself? Well, some people might say, well, all the hunters are out in the woods. Maybe not. Now, if you got a deer yesterday, you've got your quota, right? You've got your limit. There are fewer hunters, and that is a worry to Game Commission officials and to other hunters. because a lot of their programs are supported by the hunting license fees, and that is down in recent years about 25%. It wasn't all that long ago that there were about 1 million hunters who took to the woods on the first day of deer season. Yesterday's estimate was 750,000. 750,000, still a lot of deer hunters, but down 25%. Not as many people hunt, right? You still have hunters in your family? And in many families, it's a tradition. You know, it's passed down from generation to generation. And not just men, women as well. I know when I was in school, in junior high school, for example, I think just about everybody in my class, the boys at least, were hunters. Nowadays, there's only one person in my extended family that I know that hunts still. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525, open talk. Oh, one other question I wanted to ask, and I don't know whether anybody knows the answer to this or not. The Pennsylvania Game Commission has divided up Pennsylvania into, I think they're called wildlife management districts, and there are many of them throughout Pennsylvania, and the dividing lines in most cases run right through the middle of counties. Butler County, for example, is split into two different wildlife management districts. Now, you would say, well, so what? Well, it's very complicated, and I don't know how hunters figure this out, to be honest with you. In some of the wildlife management districts, you're allowed to hunt both antlered and antlerless deer here at the beginning of the season. And we used to call them bucks and does. I guess they don't use that terminology anymore. But in other places, you're not. In other wildlife management districts, you're only allowed to hunt antlered deer or bucks during the first few days, and then it shifts over. So at Butler County, for example, you know, you got this dividing line that runs right through the middle of the county. How do you tell? I mean, I'm serious. How do you tell what district you're in? There aren't any boundary markers or anything when you're out in the woods. I guess you're just supposed to make your best guess, make your best estimate. But I was looking this morning, as a matter of fact, because someone asked me the question, you know, can you hunt doe now as well? Or is it just antlered deer? In days gone by, you had a buck season for 2 weeks, as I recall, when I was a kid. 2 weeks, and then you had like 2 or 3 days of doe season. That was it. Very limited time to harvest does. Now, that all changed many, many years ago, but it seems so complex to me today, I honestly don't. I guess if you're a deer hunter, you know, you take the time to figure that out, or maybe they have, you know, classes or special information that tells you. I looked at the map today and I said, man, I wouldn't know what I was doing. Anybody know the answer to that? 283-2525 is our number. 283-2525. And do people in your family still go to deer camp? I think most of the camps up around Tynesta died out 10 or 20 years ago. From what people tell me, and again, I'm not a hunter any longer, but from what people tell me, there's no deer up there anymore. I've had several hunters tell me that. Why would we go up there and spend a week? There's no deer there anymore. 283-2525. I'm kind of sad to see this great tradition, kind of wither away here in western Pennsylvania. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Yeah, Dave, I thought maybe I could help you out with that demarcation line, which is Route 8.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, it would have been nice. I was looking at a game. Somebody asked me the question today. Can you hunt in Butler County? Can you harvest bucks and does right now? And I said, I don't know. I'll try to find out. So I looked on the Game Commission website, and they had this map of the entire state with these very unusually drawn wildlife management districts. I mean, they're really goofy if you look at it. You know, you'd think they'd do it by county or a couple of counties grouped together. So Route 8 is the dividing line, huh?
Yes, that is my understanding.
Are you a deer hunter, sir?
Yes, sir.
So are in Butler County, are you allowed to harvest doe here at the beginning of the season, or do you have to wait a while?
Not right now, no. You will have to wait until doe season.
Hmm. But in other parts of the state, you could be, for example, I don't know, Venango County, Allegheny County, it appeared to me from my quick look at the map, you could be harvesting doe straight away.
I believe that is the case, but I don't hunt down there, so I really don't concern myself with it.
Just doesn't, I mean, to me, because I don't hunt anymore, but it just seems unduly complex to me. I don't know. There must be a good reason for it, but man.
Yes, I just started back hunting here a few years ago, and it's quite complicated now. It used to be you were allowed one deer, period, and that's not the case anymore. So you really have to read the book and, watch your P's and Q's so that you're, in compliance with everything.
You mean you can take more than one deer nowadays?
Yes, yes.
I'm trying to remember back when I hunted briefly, not for a long period, but it seems to me you could get a buck license, an antler deer license any time, but you had to get a special tag or a special additional license if you wanted to hunt does.
That is correct, yes.
Still that way? Hmm?
Yes, yes. But you can buy them in more than one location as well.
I see. In fact, there were even some places where they had a lottery. Where if you wanted a doe license, you could put your name in a hat, and maybe you got one and maybe you didn't.
Right. And I think, as you stated before, there's a lack of hunters now, and it doesn't seem to be that difficult to get an antlerless license now.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot for the information, my friend. You've enlightened me a great deal. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I was going to tell you something else, too.
Well, please go ahead. No, please.
Yeah, you were wondering about the deer kill.
Mm-hmm.
I was up in Clarion County yesterday, and by 3 o'clock, we had weighed 62 deer. And there was a pretty doggone nice bucks came in.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems like a pretty high number. Was this all in one place, or were
you?
Well, yeah.
Yes, at the Sportsman's Club. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one that I recall was a 10-point, 188-pound dressed. So that was a big deer.
Yeah. Well, Clarion County's still got a lot of deer, but Venango County does too. I have heard, though, that further north, up around Tynesta, that used to be like, hunter's heaven, not so many deer up there anymore.
Well, I don't know. I restrict my hunting to close at home anymore.
All right, friend, my friend. Hey, thanks a lot. Good to talk with you.
All right. Take care.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 283-2525. Lots of information there from a hunter. Hi, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know whether Armstrong Channel 10 will be showing the Christmas parade? Because I've looked for it several times, and I haven't seen anything. I've seen the Veterans Parade on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you a couple of things. Number one, they will be showing it for sure, and it will be replayed several times over the next, week or so. In fact, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if they played it for a couple of weeks. But we haven't received a schedule yet from Armstrong. So there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, long holiday weekend, first day of deer season. It takes a little bit of work to edit that videotape and get it, make sure that it's all ready for air, and then to schedule it, and so on and so forth. I can promise you that as soon as we get that information in the newsroom, we will pass it on to you. I checked late in the day yesterday with Kayla, and they hadn't received it yet. But I understand. Thank you. Pat Parker just handed me the schedule.
Oh.
Yeah. Boy, how about that? Man, oh, man.
Good.
You called at the right time.
Yes, I did.
Okay, here we go. I'm just reading this for the first time. The parade video will air 12:30 p.m. and 9:30 p.m. on Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday of this week.
Okay.
So that's tomorrow, and again on mm-hmm. Friday, and then again on Sunday. So that's every other day starting tomorrow.
Okay.
12:30 and 9:30.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday.
Were you downtown for the parade, or are you waiting to see it for the first time?
No, I didn't go downtown for the parade, and I'd like to see it for the on TV for the first time. Mm-hmm. I just know some people that were in it, and hopefully I could catch it. And I was a little disappointed because I had it on the evening of the parade because I can't take that cold weather, so I was disappointed that I couldn't watch. It wasn't on at the same time that the parade was going on.
Well, this was probably, it was chilly because I was out for the whole time. In fact, I was one of the panel of judges for the floats, and we were, the first part of our judging took place during the daylight in the afternoon hours, and we were walking around. We went around to all the floats and walked around and looked at them, and that was, you kept warm that way. But for the the nighttime judging, we have a final judging after dark because that's when all the floats are lit up, And for that, we were just all sitting there, at tables on the back of a flatbed truck, and it did get a little chilly by the end of the parade.
A little windy that evening. Yeah.
Well, it didn't rain. That's the good part.
Right.
I was afraid. So there you go, my friend. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Sure. Thanks. Glad I had the information. I must have just come into the newsroom because I checked late yesterday, and I know we didn't have it yet this morning. So tomorrow, Friday, and Sunday, 12:30 and 9:30. How long did the last? A little over an hour, I think. I don't know, because I was busy judging, maybe an hour and 10 minutes, hour and 15, something like that. That would be my guess. It was a wonderful parade. It's so fantastic to see all the lights on the floats, because we see them all during the daytime. Actually, many of the groups are putting them together, starting in mid-afternoon. And they get them all done, but they're not lit up yet. You have no idea what they're finally going to look like. And then when they start parading down Main Street, it's pretty neat, pretty neat. That was the 53rd year for the Spirit of Christmas Parade here in Butler, 53 years. Yeah, pretty neat. It was a good parade, good parade. And huge crowds, thousands of people drawn downtown. Little ones, real little ones. And so many of the kids this year had the light sticks, I guess they were supposed to be sabers from Star Wars. Is that right, Pat Parker? Do you know? Because in years gone by, they had like rings, like bracelets and necklaces that lit up. These were sabers. At least all the kids were using them for saber sticks. There were Star Wars battles going on all over up and down Main Street. And I heard that it was people's gas that distributed those to the kids. I had that secondhand. I didn't talk to the folks at People's, but they said they were distributing them free to the kids, which was kind of nice. And they were all different colors. And, very nice, very colorful. Good kickoff to the holiday season. Something about a parade, huh? Now, the Macy's Parade in New York City on Thanksgiving Day. And there are a number of other parades around the area. I think that about does it, though, in terms of Christmas parade activity, because the other big ones that will come up in a little over a month will be the New Year's parades. A lot of the football bowl games have parades. Rose Bowl parade is probably the biggest one, the most famous. By the way, the Butler High Band has participated in both of those, the Macy's parade and the Rose Bowl parade several years ago. But the other bowl games have parades, too. The Orange Bowl, I was down there one year for the Orange Bowl, and their parade is the night before. And even then, this is many, many years ago, it was a nighttime parade, because most of the other ones are daytime. Rose Bowl parade, Pasadena, it's daytime. But the Orange Bowl parade was at night. It was pretty neat. And, of course, everybody was walking around in Bermuda shorts and shirt sleeves in Miami. On New Year's Eve. Kind of nice. Open talk on the program today, 283-8255. 253-2525. And let me see here. Okay, I'm good for a while yet. Coming up, our first guest will be with us shortly, and that is David Cord. Director Cord, Director of VA Butler Healthcare, will be with us. We'll get an update on what's going on with the new facility, the new A.B. Abraham Healthcare Center. And there was also a dedication for another portion of the complex that took place a couple of weeks ago, I think. Another portion of the complex named after a local veteran. So we'll talk with Director Cord about that. Right now, though, let's get back to the people. It is Open Talk, 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Dave, my husband and some of his friends had a camp up at Kinzu Dam. And, of course, it's now underwater.
Yeah.
And there was a program on Channel 13 not too long ago. And it showed a man standing on the bridge, the edge, before they put the water in. And you could see little buildings down, laying, sitting down at the bottom of the dam. And I often wondered if possibly that was their camp. There was a post office. There was a grocery store. And there were some Seneca Indians that lived there.
Wow.
They had their camps. They had their cabins for the winter. And they lived in tents in the summer.
Hmm. Well, that used to be a big deal around here.
Yeah.
To go up to Deer Camp, up north. North of Cook Forest, Tynesta area, President, some of those small towns up there.
And yeah, I was up there a couple times to help clean the cabin out. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a nice job at all.
Well, I knew a couple. I never had a cabin there, as I say. I only hunted for a short period, and it was quite a while ago. But I had two or three acquaintances of mine, friends of mine. Often it was a family affair. You know, they would have their grandfather or their father may have had a camp, and then they kind of took it over. And so it had been in the family for a while. And they would go up there for a week, you know.
Do you know, was that the government that took that over?
Well, for Kinzu, it would have been. Yeah,
I thought.
Yeah. They would have condemned that those properties. They paid for them. You know, they didn't just take them from people. They paid them fair market value. But the same thing happened at Marine State Park whenever they constructed Lake Arthur.
Yes,
there was a whole town out there that disappeared. It's now underwater. It was called the Village of Isle.
Oh.
ISLE.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
And there's still a road out there by, what's that golf course? Lake Arthur. Arthur Country Club. It's on Isle Road. And if you follow Isle Road out past the golf course, it goes right into the water.
There's no, really?
Yeah.
Well, I haven't been up there in years, but I know that. That brought back a lot of memories when they had that program on Channel 13.
Yes, I would. I'd like to have seen that.
Yeah, it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing, my friend.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. 283, gone to Deer Camp. Huh? Yeah. And I think, and of course that's, the heyday of Deer Camps is probably close to a generation ago, maybe two. But I think it was mostly a guy thing. I never went to Deer Camp or anything like that, but I think it was mostly a guy thing back in those days. There are a lot of women who hunt these days, a lot of women and girls, young girls. And they have some neat programs here in Pennsylvania. I think it's called the Mentor Program, where young kids, some of them very, very young, are allowed to hunt if they're with a parent or a guardian at all times. And there are some other regulations too about them carrying loaded rifles, I think. I don't know all the details, but they do the best they can to make it as safe as possible. But they're trying to make sure that the tradition of hunting in Pennsylvania doesn't die out. And if you go back a couple of generations and start talking about that, people would think you were nuts, because if your father or your grandfather or your great-grandfather hunted, then you hunted. No. It was just kind of a matter of course. not the same anymore. But with these mentor programs and with the great increase in the number of females who are out hunting, I think that's good. That'll keep the tradition going. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk on this segment of the program today. 283-2525. A couple of items in the news. I'm somewhat astonished at the attention people here in the United States pay to an engagement in the British royal family. I mean, we're down to Prince Harry now, who is, I don't know, he's well down the totem pole in terms of being, you know, in line for the throne, as they say. And he officially announced his engagement yesterday. He's marrying an American actress, of all things. A movie actress, TV actress, I guess. Meghan Markle. So there's a big picture of the two of them, an engagement picture above the fold in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette today, a big color picture. I am blessedly unaware of a lot of pop culture these days. I decided many years ago just to let it slide by. You can't be up to date on all of this stuff, and I'm not sure that I want to be. People here at the radio station, some of the younger folks, were talking about Meghan Markle. I had never heard of her before. I had never heard of, not only had I not seen her, she was in some TV show here in the United States. I don't know. I never heard of the show. I never saw it. I never saw her. I just said, Meghan Markle. Okay. She's an American. Okay. That's good. And an actress. Okay. Royals in the United Kingdom only used to marry other royals, you know? And many times from other countries, like Queen Elizabeth, for example. You know, daughter of the king. She took over as queen on the death of her father. She was very young. She was like, I don't know, 21, 22 years old. Her husband is Prince Philip. He's from the German royal family. And that's kind of the way it was for centuries, you know, especially in Europe. It would be these arranged marriages among royals in one country or another. Not that way anymore, huh? No, not that way anymore. Well, Harry's older brother, Prince William, married, I have to stop and think because it's hard for me to keep track of all these names. Catherine Middleton, yeah, also a so-called commoner. What a derogatory term, huh? Oh, she's a commoner. You have to say that with your nose up in the air, I guess. She's a commoner. What a slap, you know. I'd say, hey, Jocko, I'm no commoner. And now this woman, it's a commoner, you know. However, the Queen says she's delighted. What's she going to say about her grandson? You know, it's his choice, after all. But boy, the attention that it gets here in America baffles me. Baffles me. Take one more call before we welcome our first guest. Caller, you've got the last word today. This is Dave. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, nice to have you with us.
Did you happen to see the editorial in last night's Butler Eagle? Regarding government pay increases?
I did not see that one, no.
Oh, well, I don't know. I wish people would pay more attention to that because it's not, they're automatic pay increases every year,
mm-hmm.
You know, regardless of what anybody else gets and regardless of how many hours they put in actually doing government work.
Yeah, it's a pretty good deal. They went to that about 20, 25 years ago, instead of having to vote on what their pay would be, they approved this automatic percentage raise every year in perpetuity. Pretty sneaky deal, huh?
It's very sneaky. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And this article says about that it should be changed, that they should, you know, go back and change it back.
I agree. And by the way, as soon as the U.S. Congress did that, the local governments jumped right on it, too.
Sure.
State lawmakers, county commissioners, they all passed this legislation. Well, this is really neat. We don't have to vote on our own pay raises and face the people. It's automatic every year.
That's right. We don't have to remind them how much we're cheating them out of.
I don't know whether I'd say cheating, but, a pay raise, I think, should come to a vote.
And it should be based on what you produce.
Yeah.
That's what the rest of us get, so I just can't quite see it.
I'm with you. I'm in your corner on that one.
Okay. Well, I know I brought it up with Brian Ellis
when
he was on your phone party one day, and he said, well, we passed that legislation, and we can't change it. And I said, well, if you can pass it to increase it, you can pass it to change it. But nothing was ever done about it, and obviously nobody ever called him on it,
There are some lawmakers locally who don't accept it.
Yeah, but they still take it, and they put it someplace else.
Well, that could be, and I don't want to start naming names because it would be a partial list. But the only one I can tell you for sure has now died. He was a county commissioner, Paul Montgomery, and he took no salary. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
The whole time, not only did he not take a raise, he did not accept a salary while he was county commissioner. That's a dedicated public servant, if you ask me. I don't care what party you are. I don't care what color you are. That's a true public servant, the late Paul Montgomery.
We need more of those. Not so much that they don't take any salary at all, which is, commendable, but that they, balance their work with what they get and not gouge the public, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm hearing you, my friend. Thanks for joining us today. Nice to talk with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Coming up, our first guest today, and that is David Cord, director of VA Butler Healthcare. So please stick around. We'll be talking with him in just a moment. In fact, we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327. Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. What a gorgeous day. Just remarking on that as I stepped out into the lobby here to welcome our guest. David Cord is the director of VA Butler Healthcare. And that's the first thing we said to each other, Director Cord. What a day, huh?
It's gorgeous after this time of the year.
Yeah, sunshine, warm. Nice. We may not have it this warm and this sunny for a long time after today. So I hope we still get a little more warm weather, but you never know. So VA Butler Healthcare, boy, I was looking. I guess I was going through my file here, getting ready to talk to you today, and this popped out about the traveling tribute wall that came this summer. And I started looking back. What a year it has been for VA Butler Healthcare.
It's been incredibly busy, rewarding, very enjoyable year for the veterans and for the staff. We've had the wall. We've opened the new HCC. We just dedicated our community living center and named that after Sergeant Cusick. We have added to the veteran population that we serve. We've had open houses for the new facility. It's just been one thing after another all year long.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the late Sergeant Joseph George Cusick, because I must confess, whenever the news releases came from your office that you are going to name the Community Living Center in his memory, I didn't know his story. I didn't know who he was. Gave his life in service to the country, and from the Bruin area, as I recall, right up in northern Butler County.
That is correct. Mm-hmm. He's and like you, I didn't know a whole lot about Sergeant Cusick either. Actually, the day that we had the event and getting the opportunity to hear his family members speak of him, meet with his family members and individuals that he had served with and talk to them, you know, I commented that day that I think we couldn't have chosen a more worthy person to name our community living center after. He's quite a remarkable person.
I was not able to attend the ceremony. In fact, I was on vacation that week, but I did want to talk to you about it a little bit because, well, Vietnam veteran, first of all, he died in Southeast Asia, right?
That is correct. He he was Special Forces in the Army and 22 years old and on a mission, died helping to save others in the process of making sure that others could get out safely.
In December of 1967, he was awarded posthumously, after his death, awarded the Silver Star.
Yes,
that's pretty big. That's pretty big honor.
It certainly is. Very, like I said, just very impressive individual to learn about. At the ceremony, a couple family members read letters that he had written after he got over to Vietnam, and To hear them read those letters and the back and forth that he was having with his brothers and with his parents at the time. And the last letter that they read was, I want to say, maybe 6-7 days before his death. That was probably one of the most impactful parts of the event for me, was to hear his words and how much he was concerned about his family back here when he was right there involved in what he was involved with, and yet his thoughts and his concerns were for his family.
You know, you have to put yourself back in that time. I felt a special empathy for this man. Never knew him, but my hometown, where I spent my childhood years, was about 3 or 4 miles away from where he lived. So I felt like I was, you know, almost in the same neighborhood. I grew up in Parker, which is the next town up the road from Bruin, up Route 268. And when we think of our troops fighting overseas today, currently in Afghanistan, some other places too, you know, there's communication. Obviously, it's dangerous. We have people giving their lives still, tragically. But you can also call home. You can Skype, you know, if there's a new arrival in the family, you can see them on Skype. Back in the 60s, during the Vietnam War, these guys just disappeared for months at a time. Now, they could write letters back and forth. That took a while, but there was no telephone communication or internet or texting or any of that stuff that we have today. They were just gone for
exactly. I was struck. They would, when they were reading the letters, they would read the dates. You know, that each letter was either written or was written or received, and that was precisely part of what struck me as well, too. And even in one of the letters, he commented to his family that he was sorry that he hadn't been able to write for several weeks, but they had been busy on missions, and he really couldn't talk more about it. But yeah, you think of how today, if you don't hear from a family member within a few hours of a text message, you start to get concerned, and then put yourself in both sets of shoes here, his in the war and his family's back here, going weeks at a time without any communication or any understanding on either end about what's going on.
It's an eye-opener. You're right, I was smiling when you said that. If you have a family member that's going on a trip, you know, somebody's driving to whatever, Erie or Harrisburg, and, you know, now text me, you know, when you get there or when you're halfway down the turnpike or whatever. Boy, not back in the days of Vietnam.
No, it's it was, like I said, it was very moving to listen to those letters. And the other part that really struck me and in talking with his brothers in particular is this idea that, you know, he got on the plane that day to leave and was standing at the door of the plane waving to his family, and that's it. I mean, that's the last time that they saw their brother, they saw their son, and that's the last time that he saw his family after that. And you don't think about that, obviously, in the moment, that you're never going to see somebody again. And clearly that was something that has stayed with his brothers in particular all these years later.
Where there's, I said, I was on vacation the day of the week of the ceremony. It was November 13th, a Monday. So there were several members of his family who were able to make it for the ceremony?
Oh, there was probably upwards of about 100.
Oh.
We ended up with probably in excess of 200 people at this event. We had a former classmate of his from high school who had known him then who came in and talked. We had another Special Forces individual who came in, and he was actually one of the individuals who was part of the mission to try to get Sergeant Cusick back out and was unsuccessful. And his speech was very very emotionally impactful. Just I think it's been with him a long time that he hadn't been able to get Sergeant Cusick back out. And I think him coming here and being able to give the talk that he did, I think was good for him and for the family both.
He was, and we're speaking of the late Sergeant Joseph Cusick, a Bruin native who died in Vietnam. He was assigned to the Command and Control Detachment of the 5th Special Forces Group, Airborne. By the way, as part of your training, you will jump out of a plane. Special Forces is an elite group to begin with.
And you're going to jump out of a plane into parts of the war where other people aren't necessarily going to be.
Hmm. Well, how appropriate that ceremony, and now forever, the Community Living Center will be named in his memory.
We're very excited about that. We, as I said to the family, it really was our honor to do this. Our Community Living Center is a place where a lot of our residents there are going to live out the rest of their life. This is their home. And I think to have their home named after Sergeant Cusick, who, you know, paid the ultimate price. He made the ultimate sacrifice to save others and for the freedoms we enjoy in this country. I think it was a nice tribute also to the residents of our Community Living Center that we did this. And like I said, I think we could not have found a more fitting person to name our Community Living Center after.
We're talking with David Cord. David Cord is the director of VA Butler Healthcare. We'll take a quick break and we'll continue our conversation with the director here in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Butler County Symphony Association and the Symphony Orchestra. You know, you can spend this entire Saturday, this upcoming Saturday, with the symphony in one way or another. The day kicks off with the annual holiday tour of homes. This will be the 28th year that they've done this at the symphony. Very popular, and it is a major fundraiser for the symphony. Helps them with some of their pretty expensive bills they've got to pay to keep the symphony going year after year. So they have the annual holiday tour of homes. It's a self-driving tour. Starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. You can see and visit inside beautiful homes in the area. They're all decorated for the holidays. Tickets are available at the Symphony office. It's on the Diamond downtown, right on the corner there. Also available at May's Music Shop on Jefferson Street, East Jefferson, or at Meridian Station on Meridian Road. That's Saturday, starting at 10 in the morning until late afternoon. And then Saturday evening, join the Symphony's biggest concert of the year, the annual Holiday Traditions Concert. Concert time is 7:30 at Butler Intermediate High School Auditorium. And folks, I wouldn't dilly-dally around if you're thinking about going to the Christmas concert, the holiday concert, because it's usually a sellout. Check on ticket availability either at the Symphony office on the Diamond or online at butlercountysymphony.org. And that's this coming Saturday night. We chat with David Cord, the director of VA Butler Healthcare. So we have one of your buildings now in the complex, in the dual campus complex of VA Butler Healthcare. How do you like that? I kind of like that.
That works.
Named in memory of Sergeant Dick Husick. And, of course, we named the new healthcare center after the late A.B. Abraham. So a couple of nice gestures. How are things going out there? Everything smooth sailing?
For the most part, yes, it is. It's actually, when you think about what we've accomplished in the move here over the past 3 months, I would say things are going incredibly smooth. This has been a major change for staff. In particular, and for the veterans getting accustomed to the new location, but it really is, it's working as designed. It's really a nice layout for the veterans. The staff have found it to be exceptionally well suited for the delivery of care that they are providing as well. So I think, my hat really goes off to the staff that we have there. People have worked exceptionally hard for many months now so that the transition was as seamless as possible for the veterans, and the feedback that I've received from the veterans is exactly that. They've noticed no hiccups, and to me that's what's most important, that everything has worked well for them.
Now, you still have staff at the older portion of the complex. You have the community living center there. The domiciliary is there. But most of the administrative staff, I would think, has moved into the new building, right?
That's correct. We have the majority of the administrative and ancillary staff are in the new healthcare center. We do have administrative staff for both the CLC and the domiciliary program that are co-located with their programs at the original campus. And we have our facilities and our grounds crew at the original campus still, so they have some of their leadership there as well too, but the majority has moved over, and administrative functions like contracting and human resources and fiscal, those have all moved into the new building as well too.
Probably a little bit more elbow room than you had in the old building, the main, what was it called, Building 1?
Building 1 is actually, we decreased the square footage. In Building 1, we had 240,000 square feet, roughly. In the new building, we have 168,000. So we actually dropped square footage, but the design and the layout just work so much better for the delivery of care. And administratively, for our functions as well, we have, on the second floor of the building, laid things and structured things as well too, that it just improves efficiency. So even though we went down in square footage, we actually gained operationally a lot of advantages.
Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of places where veterans will go on the first floor, right?
95-97% of what they need is on the ground floor. Mm-hmm. That's been one of the major satisfiers that the veterans have had so far in the new building, is it's all right there. Come in on the ground floor. Everything flows logically through the building. And then, the ancillary services that they might need, such as lab services, pharmacy services, physical therapy, all those are also on the ground floor. So it's just it's a much better design than having everything spread out over six floors like we did in Building 1.
in terms of access to the building. I got a small note from John Paul, the executive director of the Butler Transit Authority, and this was back around Veterans Day. It was a couple of weeks ago now, who said, I'll paraphrase, hundreds of local veterans and family members have been utilizing Route 5 to access the new VA Healthcare Center on Duffy Road. Service began through the Butler Transit Authority on September 5th, and through Veterans Day, they had served already more than 340 passenger trips.
Yes.
So that's a lot of buses pulling up and heading out.
And it's worked remarkably well. We actually, the front of the building, the overhang to the front entrance was designed to allow for the bus to pull right up to the front door underneath the overhang. So weather is not an issue for those taking public transportation. The Transit Authority was great to work with, very, very helpful in the whole process for us, and having that public transportation at the new facility without sacrificing, it still stops at the old campus as well, too. So it's actually just been another big satisfier for the veterans and for our staff as well.
Mm-hmm. You have to wonder why, and of course it was a long time ago, the late 30s when that other facility was built, and it was built as a tuberculosis sanitarium, but you would wonder why they wouldn't have a pull-through like that for not only buses, but cars were picking up patients or dropping off patients.
They have the front circle at the old building, but nothing that protects from the elements.
Yeah,
so this is another nice satisfier for the veterans, particularly on those rainy, chilly November days. And what's to come ahead, it's much nicer when you can get dropped off right at the front door.
Well, in terms of the general public getting there, Duffy Road was repaved this summer, which made a tremendous improvement.
Yes,
getting out there, and in fact, it looked like it was even widened the last time I went down there.
Yes, there is some widening right at the entrance of our new facility, so that there's a left turn lane in, and then when you turn out and head to the right coming out, there's a pull out lane that allows you to flow into traffic. And I have to say, I'm very, very pleased to say that we've had no traffic issues in the first 3 months. Knock wood, that was something I was a little concerned about. Mm-hmm. You and I had spoken in the past about the need for a traffic signal and all those studies. So far, things have worked pretty much as we had hoped with regard to the flow of traffic, and we've not had issues with that.
Now, have you had any inside info on future plans for road development out there? I'll only ask you, you may... I'm sure you know more than you're allowed to say, or that is prudent to say. But everybody knows the Center Township supervisors were talking about building another road there, and we've all been lobbying a PennDOT to come in from the other direction, since there's already a cloverleaf built there. There's already an exit on 422. There's already a cloverleaf. I'm no civil engineer, but I could design that road. and I realize these are all long-term talks, and you're not at liberty to say. But are there things that may be coming in the future that might change things a little bit?
I am hopeful that there are still many acres of undeveloped land behind our healthcare center.
Mm-hmm.
And I am hopeful that as those get developed in the future, that will spur the decision then to add the tie-in with mm-hmm. regard to the road. I don't think that will happen at this point with just the healthcare center being there, but I think as there's further development back there, that's probably going to be the impetus to get that to happen.
And
I would be thrilled if that happens.
In the meantime, the road's been repaved. It's been widened where necessary. There are no apparent problems, which a lot of people feared there might be, particularly at rush hour.
Exactly.
And quite frankly, as I'm trying to visualize this from a bird's eye view, in terms of quick connections between the two campuses, that's probably the shortest distance between two points there anyway.
Oh, it is. And that's very nice for us, is the back and forth between our two campuses is... a few minutes down mm-hmm. the road, so that works great. But I do think that with future development, there is going to be a need for additional ingress and egress to that property, and that's what will make, I think, logic sense in the future.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more. We have a few more minutes left to chat with David Cord. He's director of VA Butler Healthcare, and he's our guest on this segment of It's Your Turn. We will be right back.
Choices, decisions, quality health care. These are important issues that really hit home. It's a good thing that Concordia Visiting Nurses is here to help. Home health care can help you or your loved one recuperate from an illness, manage a chronic disease, or recover from an injury or operation right in your own home. If you're in need of home health care, choose Concordia Visiting Nurses. Call toll-free at 1-877-352-6200.
Back, folks, if you're just joining us here on It's Your Turn today, welcome. My name is Dave Malarkey. David Cord is here. He is the director of VA Butler Healthcare. So you're in the new building now, and things have settled down a little bit. Are you still having those town hall meetings? You have those pretty much on a monthly basis leading up to the, you know, because you were updating veterans and families on the construction and when's it going to open and so on and so forth. Are you still having those?
We are still having them monthly. We alternate each month between having one at the new healthcare center, and then on the off months, I will have one out in the communities where we service our community-based outpatient clinics. So we'll go out to Mercer, we'll go to Clarion, or we'll go to Cranberry, and so we go back and forth. We just had one at the main facility here a week ago, and so the next one sometime probably in late December or January will be out in one of at one of our CBOCs. But we will continue to have those every month as long as I'm the director.
So you have these community clinics outlying Mercer County, Clarion County. I know that VA Butler Healthcare is almost right in the middle between Pittsburgh and Erie, which are the closest VA healthcare centers, the only other ones in western Pennsylvania. Do they also have these community outreach programs, like Erie, for example? Do they stretch down into, Meadville area and Venango County and so on and so forth?
They do, and they actually stretch a little bit into Ohio. They're a little bit across the border into Ohio, and Pittsburgh has several, and they stretch a little bit into West Virginia. So each facility has a main facility, and then we'll have anywhere from 4 to 6 community-based outpatient clinics where we're able to provide primary care and behavioral health services along with some specialty care services too. So I like to make sure that I get out to those facilities and in those communities to do the town hall so that the veterans we serve in those counties have an easy way to come and have a meeting with leadership as well, too, instead of making everybody come to the main facility.
Mm-hmm. I forgot it's a federal program, so state borders really don't mean that much. You can go into Ohio and West Virginia. That's still part of the United States, after all. Forgot about that. I wanted to ask you about flu shots. I just scheduled a program, I believe it's the end of next week, I don't have my calendar in front of me right now, on the importance of seniors in particular getting a flu shot, for goodness sakes. Now, most of us have already gotten them. Hopefully, I got them several weeks ago, back in the beginning of the fall. Not too late, though. It's never too late. Can veterans sign up and register with the VA and still get a flu shot?
Absolutely, they can. We do flu clinics at the healthcare center. We do flu clinics in the community. We do flu clinics at our community-based outpatient clinics. So any veteran that's interested can either call the facility or go on our website and take a look at what our upcoming flu clinic schedule is. We would encourage all veterans, it's a good idea to get your flu shot. I've had mine. We have our staff get flu vaccine as well, too. But we make it as easy as possible in many locations to get out there and make it very easy for veterans to get their shot. And yes, we're just getting into flu season, really. Flu season, by definition, goes all the way through the end of March. Mm-hmm. So, clearly the earlier the better. We have the vaccine, and I would encourage veterans to please take advantage of getting the shot.
You also had a program, and I think this was since we last had a chance to chat, and I was intrigued by it. At VA Butler Healthcare, you had a Domestic Violence Awareness Day earlier this fall. Now, this has been very much in the news. It's been in the news with sports figures for the last year or so, particularly football players, National Football League. In fact, there's one big star who's suspended right now for that. And it's also come up in a variety of ways among celebrities in recent weeks as well. You had this in late October, a Domestic Awareness Day. You had a program or two for staff members?
For staff members, for the veterans we serve, and for families. It's an opportunity to raise awareness about the issue, things for veterans and spouses and family members to look for, warning signs, things to be aware of, and most importantly, resources that we have available for veterans and for families that we can offer services and offer help. There is a lot of stressors that occur with military service and combat service in particular. And so this is an opportunity to make sure that veterans are aware that sometimes those stressors can lead to actions that are clearly actions that are unwanted by anybody. And we want to make sure that the service members and their families understand that this is something that we can offer help with, we can offer assistance.
That's why I was intrigued, because there are some special circumstances, especially for troops coming back from overseas, combat zones, that could be a major problem, so that was nice to see. I think that about wraps up the things that I wanted to talk about here today. Did you get a chance to watch? I've talked with several veterans, Vietnam veterans, and questioned them about the Ken Burns series. It was on PBS a month or so ago. It was 15 hours, I think, in Vietnam. Initially, I was surprised, but then I wasn't, about the number of Vietnam veterans who said they couldn't watch it.
I have seen bits and pieces. I've not had the time investment yet to be able to watch the entire documentary, and I enjoy his documentaries. I'm not surprised, though, either. It was funny. My father was a Korean War veteran, and I was having this conversation with somebody about a week or so ago. You know, I learned more about my dad's service, military service, during the 2 days that he was laid out prior to his funeral than I ever learned from talking to him his entire life before he passed. And I think that with a lot of Korean and Vietnam veterans, I think that's probably a familiar experience. Is it's something that doesn't get talked about a lot. I think watching a documentary like that would probably be difficult for a lot of Vietnam veterans to sit there and relive that through the 15-hour documentary. So that doesn't surprise me a whole lot that that's the feedback you've received.
I'm like you. I hope at some point to watch it all. I did not. I just couldn't clear my schedule. It's a long, long time. But I did see maybe three or four episodes, and it was tough going even for—and I wasn't over there. I can understand. I've had a couple of Vietnam veterans here on the program who just said, you know, I heard it was very good. I couldn't go there. And
like I said, I completely understand that from conversations I've had with veterans of many different eras. I think that sometimes that's just too close to reality again to sit and watch something like that.
Any veterans who are listening to us today, or if you are family of a veteran and you're not registered with the VA, for goodness sakes, get registered. It's easy. It's free, right?
It's very easy. You can call. You can go online. You can stop in and see us. The one thing that you will need is a copy of your DD-214, your discharge paperwork. That's most helpful to get the enrollment process started. But by all means, please, if you've not, take the time to get enrolled, and we will, through that process, determine your category of eligibility for care. And then based upon that, if you're eligible for care, we could actually get your first appointment scheduled for you while you're there that day.
We have wonderful facilities here in Butler, and it's tragic to not take advantage of them if you're eligible, yes.
Exactly.
David Cord is the director of VA Butler Healthcare. Always good to get an update from him. Good to see you again.
Very nice to see you, and have a nice holiday
season. Yes, happy holidays to you.
Thank you.
And Ken Cowper, thanks a lot, too. Ken helps to set up our programs for us. More to come on It's Your Turn. Intriguing, I think, for the next portion of the program. We have one final guest. His name is David Green. I just found out about him a couple of weeks ago. Scheduled a chat with him. His father-in-law, who is an immigrant from Austria, ended up, and I'm not quite sure how it happened, he ended up with a bunch of Nazi papers and documents. How he got them here when he emigrated to the U.S., I do not know. But David Green, his son-in-law, wanted to find out more of the story. And that's what we'll talk to him about, because he went digging, and it's a pretty fascinating story. David Green is next. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR, and we shall return in just a moment. Hey, I want to tell you about one of our sponsors, and it's Cummings Candy and Coffee Shop, with their main headquarters on North Main Street in downtown Butler. I say main headquarters. They've been there under the red and white awning for a century. Actually, since 1905, North Main Street downtown. The aromas, the atmosphere when you walk into Cummings, it's indescribable. Right now, they're offering corporate orders of custom gift boxes to give to clients. You can choose from an assortment of various items, chocolate-covered potato chips. I've given those in the past. People are amazed. They love them. Chocolate-covered pretzels, graham crackers, cherry cordials. Why not add a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee? It's called the Main Street Roast. It's roasted right there on Main Street at Cummings. That's part of those delicious aromas when you step inside. Listen, if you're interested in these corporate orders for gifts and stuff, call Barry Cummings, 724-287-3287. Serving the Butler community since 1905, there are now three locations. North Main Street downtown, of course. There's also a Cummings at Butler Memorial Hospital, and the newest, Cummings West, on Route 68, Evans City Road. They're open 7 days a week. We'll be back with more on It's Your Turn right after this.
Did you know that Pennsylvania leads the nation in auto collisions with deer? Not a surprising fact if you live in Butler County. It's obvious that your car and the deer are damaged, but what about you? You may have injured your neck and not know it. An impact of only 8 miles per hour is enough to cause soft tissue damage and mild whiplash, which is not uncommon after striking a deer with your vehicle. If this happens to you, visit Applewood Chiropractic Center today for treatment of acute and chronic whiplash. Applewood Chiropractic Center, Thorn Apple Drive in Butler. Call 724-283-0518.
Welcome, listeners. Interesting chat coming up on the next few minutes of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Mularkey, and on this segment, we chat by telephone with guest David DeGreen, author of a book entitled He Could Make Words Sing. First of all, Mr. Green, nice to meet you. It's terrific to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Well, thank you very much. Actually, we've met once before about 4 years ago. I had another book that I was lucky enough to have an interview with about education about 4 years ago.
Gosh, you jog my memory now, but please understand I do quite a few of these.
I understand. Believe me, I understand that.
Well, listen, give us a little bit of an overview, a capsule summary of your newest, sir.
Sure, thanks. Well, Harry Reisman, the book that is about, is my father-in-law, and I was lucky enough to have discovered a treasure trove of material that he had saved over the years, starting back as far back as his parents' immigration papers, his college yearbook. So he was born in 1916, which is very pertinent for now, because now we're talking about for example, my grandson, who was just born in March, so we're about 100 years difference in terms of what's going on. And as we look forward to see what's in store for our children today or our grandchildren today, I think it's important to know what our parents and grandparents went through during the 20th century. So he's a regular person. He's the son of immigrants. He's the first in his family to go on to college, because during the Depression, his four older brothers refused to let him work and told him, you're going to be the first in our family to go to college. He went to City University in New York, which was a free public university, just as being told we should have today because of the opportunities that are necessary, because New York City actually realized that they had such a large immigrant population, they needed to find a way to get them educated. So they built a tremendous school system and a free public university system. So that's novel and unique, but it's also something that's important to learn about today. He obviously lived through the Depression. He lived through the 1930s and was an editor of a college newspaper writing about the things that were going on in the world, such as the Depression itself, mm-hmm. what was going on in Germany, what was going on in Japan, what was going on all over the world and in Italy, seeing the storm clouds rise that led to World War II, and obviously the fear of, you know, that war reoccurring just very shortly after World War I, the war that was supposed to be the greatest war, had ended. And then he becomes a veteran. He's a forward observer, which is probably one of the most dangerous jobs in the military. He was fluent in several languages, so at the end of the war, that allowed him, because he was fluent in German, to be selected to interpret materials that they found, letters, documents, and also help interpret interviews with refugees and POWs. Mm-hmm. And so amongst that, amongst the documents he brought home with him, we found many Nazi documents, propaganda, their version of Common Core, what they wanted to be taught in their schools, all sorts of different things, speeches by Goebbels, et cetera, which I subsequently donated to the National Holocaust Museum after I was finished with the materials. Then he comes home after getting a Dear Harry letter from a woman he thought he was going to marry, because he was a Northern New York Jewish gentleman, and he was in love with a Southern Baptist lovely woman from Raleigh, North Carolina, and she broke it off after 6 years of beautiful letters that went back and forth because she was concerned that they could never reconcile their religious differences. Wow. So the name of the book actually comes from a phrase from her, because as he went to a USO dance down in Camp Butner, which is not far from Raleigh, she met two men named Harry and chose him because, as she said, he could make words sing. And excerpts from the letters are in the book, and you could see how eloquent a gentleman he was. So he went on after the war. He met a woman in Brooklyn, got married, was married 47 years until he passed away. Luckily enough, he had his daughter, who I married. And then he became an ad man. So he had a dream of being a journalist, a writer, a novelist, but he had to push those dreams aside to be able to earn money to support his family. And so as a result, he became a creative person and an ad man. You could see actually some of the campaigns he worked on if you were an avid follower of the series Mad Men. He had to deal with anti-Semitism in that business. Stayed with his company for 40 years, retired, had moved to the suburbs to raise his family, and eventually ended up going down to Florida to retire. So his story is the story of so many Americans, so many families that can resonate with them, yet it tells the story of a century that was rife with strife and filled with all sorts of issues, not just the war, but obviously the Cold War, the Civil Rights Movement, Vietnam, the battles that went on in the streets during Vietnam in America that, when we look at our arguments and discourse and, you know, rallies and protests in the streets now, they look relatively calm to what went on in the 60s and early 70s. So it's a story of his life, but it's a story of America at the same time.
Hmm. Well, I can see now why you said a few moments ago that it's not really a biography. That's not really an accurate description.
No, it's again, you know, I taught history for 38 years, and one of the things I learned early on in doing that is that if you don't personalize it, no one understands it. You can't just lay out a series of facts and a series of dates and expect people to care about what's going on and be interested in it. So the more you can personalize it, the more you can say, gee, that's what it was like to have been there. Now I understand it, and now maybe I can learn from that person's experience in the past, instead of, oh, in 1942 we did this, and then maybe make some better decisions about how we act in the future.
You said that he became an ad man. What kind of ads did he write? Did he write print ads or ads for radio or television or what?
Mostly print, but the sloganeering, went through the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Lavoris, Oil of Olay, those are two things that come off the top of my head or two. Oh, Vicks Vapor Rub.
Oh.
Remember that?
Yes.
So that was actually, I think, one of his first accounts. One of the things that allowed him actually to stay with the company and move up through the ranks, because they didn't allow what they called creatives to move up in the ranks. Creatives was a euphemism they used for Jews in non-Jewish firms. But because he was fluent in Spanish this time, their clients started selling their products overseas in Latin America. They needed somebody who was fluent enough in Spanish to deal with the markets in Latin America. So that became his niche and allowed him to stay in that company. So again, it's another story of how discrimination is something that we felt in those glorious times of the 50s and 60s. But a lot of people had to struggle with that.
Yes, and I can see your point about how this story of a century can resonate with people of different backgrounds, different ethnicities. As you might well guess, with my last name of Malarkey, my ancestors come from Ireland. And
yes, if you don't show up on Sunday, don't show up on Monday.
That's right. The classic, and this was in New York City, too, no Irish need apply.
That's right.
If they were going for a job, there'd be a sign in the window, no Irish need apply.
Exactly. And again, so that's, something that I would, I taught. And, we taught, the full sides of American history, the things we all experience and all our families experience. And those are things we tend to forget as we read the headlines or listen to the chatter on Facebook, read the chatter on Facebook and Twitter. And it was interesting. I was driving out to my family yesterday for Thanksgiving, and it's bumper-to-bumper traffic, which allows you to read some of the bumper stickers. And one of the bumper stickers I thought was really terrific. It says, "Don't believe everything you think."
that's good. I like it.
Right. And so, one of the things is that, okay, so wait a minute. Stop believing everything you think. Sit down, slow down, get some perspective, put things in context, read, learn, and then maybe have some knowledge to understand more about what's going on and how your behavior should change as a result of that.
Is your book relatively new, David?
Yeah, it's actually just been published last week. So it is on Amazon. You can get it also through the distributor, which is Bookmasters. And I'm working on trying to get it into the Barnes & Nobles nationally right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a couple more minutes that you can stay with us? I had some more questions if you have a little bit more time.
Yes, I do.
I need to take a quick break here, so we'll do that. We'll pick up our conversation with our guest, David Green. Just a couple of minutes here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back. A quick word from your friends at Butler Motor Tours, a local company on South Monroe Street in Butler, online at butlerbus.com. Your headquarters for deluxe motor coach tours, outstanding show and theater packages, hundreds and hundreds of fun destinations. And with the holiday season upon us, here's a gift-giving idea. How about a gift certificate for Butler Motor Tours? You don't have to select the destination for the person that you're gifting. No, just give them a gift certificate and they can put it toward the vacation of their choosing. Get the details at Butler Motor Tours online at butlerbus.com. By the way, they're also taking a one-day trip down to the Pennsylvania Farm Show again on January 7th. Get the details on that at their website, butlerbus.com. For holiday gift giving, yes. Butler Motor Tours, 282-1000 or online at butlerbus.com, butlerbus.com.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines is not one worth having. The sports medicine specialist at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers will help you get back into action so you can keep up your lifestyle. Our experts understand that the same treatments for competitive athletes can be used for those who just want to be able to stay active. They accept major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more about how you can get back on the field by visiting TriRiversMSK.com.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're joining us a little bit late on It's Your Turn here on WISR today, that's fine. My name is Dave Mullarkey. On this segment, we're chatting with author David Green. His book, just newly published, He Could Make Words Sing, An Ordinary Man Doing Extraordinary Things. Fascinating story. We've learned a little bit about it already. I have a few more questions for David Green. Did you start writing the book while your father-in-law was still alive? Were you able to talk to him personally about these things?
No. No. I wrote the book last year. He never wanted... It's interesting. It's two questions in one. One of the things I think that also resonates is that he was a member of that silent generation who never spoke about anything, mm-hmm. especially men. They never emoted. He was sort of in the background a lot. We know he had all these experiences, but he never spoke about them, especially those in World War II. When he passed away, I started going through the material. Well, actually, before he passed away, I started to go through some of the materials he left. We bought his house, their house, my wife and I. And so one of the things that gave us a deal was that we had to clean out the garage and the basement, which he had left piled with all sorts of stuff. So I had discovered some of those documents, the Nazi documents, and I had used them in classes because I had a student who was fluent enough in German to translate them, and he was quite astonished, to tell you the truth, when he actually saw firsthand what his grandparents had been up to. So I didn't get the opportunity to really talk about it, because even when anybody tried to approach him about anything, he just never said anything. And the inspiration to sit down and write the book came from a friend who had written a book about her father and his experiences at Anzio. And I said, you know what? It's time. Let's go dig into this treasure trove and do something with it.
I can so relate to you, David Green. My father was in World War II as well. He was in the 82nd Airborne. He was 20 years old. I mean, it's just scary to think about that.
The experiences that went, I was in Vietnam era, and I was lucky enough to have a lottery number of 346, so I didn't get chosen to, I didn't get drafted. But I had friends who did, and we're always so concerned. I mean, it's such an interesting thing about our veterans. I mean, in World War II, they wrote a GI Bill of Rights, which allowed them to come back and buy homes and go get an education. Now, there are arguments about whether or not kneeling at football games is disrespectful to our veterans, and yet the VA still doesn't maintain enough care for them. During the Vietnam era, they came home and they were lucky if they were ignored. They had eggs thrown at them. They have gone through so many different things, and yet so many of them have suffered through post-traumatic stress disorder. Back in World War II, it was battle fatigue. And so all of us, as you said, either parents or grandparents or friends or neighbors, we all can share the experiences of the people of that era, because the faces may change, but things still pretty much remain the same. So we go through very many of the same types of experiences that they did. And again, it's so important to understand what it was like to be there then to help us figure out what to do now.
Your wife's grandparents, that would have been Harry's parents. They immigrated to the United States from what country, David?
They were Austrian. They were Austrian, but, again, they were Eastern European Jews, so that, mm-hmm. They came from Eastern Europe, when they lived there, Tuesday, the part of Austria they were in could have been Hungary, it could have been Russia, it could have been Poland, it could have been anything, but more importantly was their cultural ethnic religious identification. And when they came here, they were treated, again, the same way that, you know, your great-grandparents, I don't know when your parents, they came originally from Ireland, that the Italians were treated with people from who are Muslim or Hindu are treated today, or from Latin America are treated today. They're treated with disdain until they finally get a foothold in this country and become part of the fabric of this country. So, again, this is not a new story. It's a story that's repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated, and we still don't seem to learn from it.
What was your wife's reaction when you told her about your plan, your inspiration for this book? Was she okay with it, and is she okay with it now that it's been finished?
She loved the idea, and she actually, you know, helped in terms of putting it together. A lot of the material that I received were interviews from various family members as their memory to try to, you know, probe their memories. And so she was, excuse me, she was part of that. So a lot of it also because of that, and thank you for asking, also deals with family dynamics over the years, mm-hmm. Bringing kids up in different eras. Where the confrontations may have occurred, where the relative calm may have been, again, depending upon who's growing up when, and growing up in the 60s was a different thing than growing up in the 90s, you know. So there were all these kinds of things. So, yeah, it brought back interesting memories for her and the rest of her family, and they were all very glad that I did it.
I'm fascinated by you discovering this treasure trove of Nazi papers in your father-in-law's garage. I've just been reading some Wire stories about he's a retired FBI agent. And I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he has undertaken and he's assembled a team now to try to investigate who betrayed Anne Frank.
I saw that. Yeah.
Have you seen the story as well? And he's, of course, this has been investigated countless times, but he says now with our new computer databases and so on, and a team that he's assembled, he thinks he might be able to come up with the answer. But it's fascinating, this story. And, you know, and we're talking now, 70, 80 years ago.
It was his linguistic ability, his natural ability to become fluent in several. He was fluent in seven languages. So at the end of the war, they were looking for people who could help interpret and translate, and he was able to do that. Now, how he snuck those things back here is another story, but I'm glad he did, because it's certainly, and I think the people at the Holocaust Museum are glad they did, because they said these are originals that they did not have prior to this.
And glad that he kept them in the garage and didn't throw them out after all those decades.
Oh, he didn't throw anything out. I mean, I also had his entire set of Army records.
Wow.
Everything, including notes that he took in artillery school. I mean, the handwritten notes, the actual protractors and hand tools that they used to learn to call them, fire from the artillery that was 7 miles behind him. Mm-hmm. I mean, here we are, in the 21st century, somebody in Utah is aiming a drone at a window in a house in Afghanistan, and we forget that back then, these guys were in the front line, sometimes on the other side of the front lines, saying, okay, I have a map, here's a protractor, I'm trying to tell somebody 7 miles away who's got a howitzer to put that shell there and not where I'm standing.
Wow, amazing. Listeners, sounds like a fascinating read, doesn't it? And yes, the story of Harry Weissman, am I pronouncing that correctly?
No, it's Greissman.
Greissman, thank you.
Right, and he could make words sing an ordinary man during extraordinary times.
Newly published, Harry's the central figure here, but it's not so much a story of his life. It's the story of a century rife with strife. I loved your turn of a phrase there, David. I actually wrote
Thank
it down
you.
Whenever you said that. And again, he could make words sing, an ordinary man doing during extraordinary times,
yes.
By David Green. If you're looking him up, and the book's available on Amazon and other places too. David, what a delight to chat with you. Thanks so much for the time. Enjoy the conversation.
Dave, thanks very much. I'm glad I was here, and I hope to come back again sometime.
You can count on it, sir.
Great.
Okay, so long.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 0606. The pick three, 229-229. Pick four is 4899. Pick five, 56182. Wild ball for each of those is 8. And the treasure hunt, 3, 9, 23, 24, and 26. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
We thank our guests visiting with us today, David Green, with whom we just chatted by telephone from New York City, and David Cord, director of VA Butler Healthcare, here in the studio with us. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we have several guests from Butler downtown. Three or four people will be visiting with us. Also on tomorrow's program, some stocking stuffer gift ideas.